Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels. It is Sunday, March 31st, 2019, and by golly, did we have a topic today. First of all, I'd like to say I welcome suggestions for topics, and today's topic grew out of a suggestion of a listener, actually 1 or 2 weeks ago. And the listener said, Dr. Daniels, can you talk to us about how these scientists managed to produce stuff that supports imaginary diseases and fake things and stuff that just plain isn't true? And so I said, you know, that is an excellent, excellent topic. So today's topic is how perfectly honest scientists create fraudulent research. And when I say fraudulent research, I mean research that confirms things that are not true. Research that supports medical interventions that are ineffective, dangerous, and even deadly. So, and this is something that I think needs to be understood. When I was in medical school, I totally did not understand this. I had, like, no grip. They're barraging us with all of this information and all of this research. I'm going to call it so-called research. Because it wasn't until many years later that I understood what it was. But the research is often, by the way, conflicting. For example, the research on hormone replacement. Some research shows that earning more money is a risk factor for more broken bones. Other research shows earning less money is a factor. Some research shows having more kids is a factor for breaking bones. Others show that having fewer kids. So a lot of this stuff is conflicting. So it's difficult to sort out. A lot of people spend tremendous amounts of time trying to sort it out. So today, we're going to make that job easier. For those of you who like to read research and try to sort out what's true and what's not, I'm going to greatly simplify this. Now also, so the first thing to understand is who are these research scientists, right? Who the heck are they? What are they? You know, how much money do they earn? Who do they work for? How do they get their assignments? What's going on here? So we hear a lot about research scientists at universities. But let's see, who do research scientists actually work for? These are the top employers of research scientists. Top 10 employers. Hot tip, none of them are universities. Number one employer for research scientists, drum roll please, Amazon. I'm not saying it's just good or bad. I'm just saying that's the employer. An employer is someone who pays you money to do what you tell them to do. Okay, just to let you know what that is. Oh, excuse me, University of Washington is number two. International Business Machines, that's IBM, employs research scientists. Merck, that would be a drug company. Pfizer, another drug company. Stanford University. Now, I didn't tell you how much they pay these research scientists. University of Washington pays $54,000. And 500. So 54,000 was just rounded down to that. Stanford pays 65,000. Amazon pays 120,000. IBM 146,000. Merck 81,000. Pfizer 87,000. Intel 121,000. Bristol Myers Squibb 95,000. Battle Memorial Institute 78,000. And Gilead Sciences 117,000. So you get the gist here. No one's getting rich being a research scientist. That's number one. Number two, though, is you're like, well, what's Amazon got to do with research scientists? What's that got to do with healthcare or health? Well, Amazon, of course, has the Fitbit wristbands where you can monitor your health. And they're really moving in a very big way into health-related products. But this is the thing to understand, is that research scientists are not self-directed individuals. They are told what to research. And in many cases, they're even given the question in which to research on. And, take another step further, they are given certain outcomes. For example, I knew a research scientist who had a PhD, and she was a very good research scientist. And so I asked her, I said, well, what kind of research do you do? Oh, I research whatever I want. I said, really? Well, what kind of research? When, what's the title of the topic? She said, well, you know, everything has to be cancer related, or you can't get funded, you can't get paid for it. So I just research what I want and just say it's related to cancer and it helps cancer. That was an eye-opener for me. Now, this person's a basically honest person, generally, but in order to get paid, she had to say that whatever she was researching was related to cancer and was going to somehow improve cancer. So this is just that's a peek into it, like a micro peek into the life of a research scientist. And so at her university, she worked at a university. Her university basically told her, we want research about cancer. Excuse me. Never mind. There might have been some pretty obviously pressing stuff that was fascinating or interesting. And what kind of research? Well, as you can tell by the individuals who are employing research scientists, the research is product related. So the research that's being funded here is product related. In other words, the research department, the research scientist, is an appendage to the marketing department. So the first you have this research is limited because the scientist is employed and is directed as to what he can or cannot research. For example, when I was in medical school, they were doing all these, use this antibiotic for this, that antibiotic for that, the other one, blah, 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 all these different antibiotics. And before I graduated from medical school, I memorized at least a good 20 antibiotics. And each antibiotic had charts with boxes saying our antibiotic is better in this, 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 and this category. None of the categories were relevant to did the patient get better, how soon did they get better, and what was the follow-up in terms of a week, a month, a year, in terms of getting a second infection. As a doctor, or a young doctor, that's what I wanted to know, was which antibiotic was going to be the most beneficial to the patient. Never, ever were any of those questions researched. Never. Why? Because the scientists doing the research were all employees and were directed explicitly not to research those particular parameters. And if you look at antibiotics today, you will still see that those parameters are not measured. So for an individual, a doctor who wants to responsibly prescribe a medication, all the research on that medication has been done by scientists employed by the company making that medicine. And then all of these companies that make these products are interlocking. What does that mean? It means each company owns stock and all their competitors, more or less. So this means that nobody wants to bankrupt their competitor because, you know, they're all kind of friendly. But the point is that scientists are not independent thinkers. So that's and it's not that they're not independent thinkers because that's who they are. It's because this is their job. Their job is to collect, you know, they're being paid by an entity that has interests. And those interests don't parallel what a thinking patient or physician might want to know about a drug or even about a disease. Those questions are never answered. So the question, for example, about a particular disease, an obvious question is, all right, you've diagnosed me having this disease. All right, got that. So what are my chances of dying compared to someone who's perfectly healthy? That question is never answered. Never. If that question was answered, then you would find that men with prostate cancer, diagnosed with prostate cancer, actually live longer than men who are classified as healthy and not having prostate cancer. And so, but that question is not one that you're going to get an answer to based on university research, or there's no scientist that's going to give you that answer. That answer can be found in databases of U.S. population studies. So what is going on here then is scientists are absolutely totally not independent at all. A scientist, just by the nature of his status as an employee, is totally biased. In other words, he's biased towards keeping his job and his paycheck. Now, these paychecks, which can be as small as $54,000 or as large as $146,000 if you work for IBM, are comprised of many things. So it's not a straightforward just lump. Here's your paycheck. And this is another shocker. You know, how do these scientists, these totally neutral, objective, non-emotional scientists get paid? Well, let's take a look. There are many components to the pay of the scientists. So the scientist gets paid a certain amount according to profit sharing. In other words, does his employer make a profit on the results of the research? This is important to get a grip on. In order to have a share of profits, there have to be profits. In order for profits, there must be something sold. So you get my drift. So a research scientist trying to maximize his pay is obviously going to focus more on finding a product that can be sold. What else does he get paid on? Well, bonus. Part of that is bonus. So a straightforward scientist who wants to increase his pay is going to work on bonus. Is going to try to increase his bonus. So of this $141,000, let's make it a big. Let's take the higher end. That person could, as much as $15,000 of that could be bonus. As much as $16,000 could be profit sharing, and they even get a commission. Can you give me a break? A commission. So this is giving a much different view of what a research scientist is. So a commission is like a used car salesman. He's working on commission. What's his motivation? To sell more cars. His motivation isn't to improve the quality of all used cars. No. His goal is the commission. And so bonus, profit sharing, and commission. These introduce an incredible, incredible bias in the research that a scientist might choose to do. Now, the bonus, that's anything. I mean, it's like a dog doing flips or rolling over for treats. The employer gets to list what it is he's willing to give a bonus for. So this is very real bias. And this is why it's almost impossible to get research out of a so-called research scientist that might be useful on the level of the patient or the physician in their decision-making process. It can be had, but it's not easy to tease it out. And it's certainly not the motivation for the research. Okay, so that's a research scientist. But let's go a little further, because the next question is, well, wait a minute. Can't just anybody do research? Good question. Answer is absolutely not. And this really puzzled me when I was in medical school, because I was thinking to myself, there's a lot of unanswered questions here. I think when I get out, I'm going to take a look at this and see if I can't get together some information and do some research and get to the bottom of this. So research, supposedly in the better interest of the United States citizens, the government has stepped in and said, oh, no, we have special laws and rules to protect research subjects. And so if anybody wants to do research, they have to go through a process with the government, outlining what the research is going to be, who the subjects are, what's going to happen to those subjects. And it's a very expensive, lengthy, time-consuming process. One that usually can only be afforded by a large company, number one. And number two, it's so expensive that you wouldn't do the research unless you had some financial marketable outcome. So the idea of doing unbiased research based on curiosity and the desire to know, pretty much you can just flush that right down the drain. So for example, I was a doctor at the Indian reservation in northern Wisconsin. And so there was a perception that we had a big gonorrhea problem. And so, of course, we had this quick test that we were doing. And so I said, you know what? Let me just send two tests to the lab. I'm going to send a culture, which is the gold standard. If the culture is negative, then the person is disease-free. And I'm going to send a quick test. So I did this for every individual that I did a culture on. And guess what I found out? I found out that the quick test showed there was gonorrhea, when actually there wasn't, in about 25% of cases. So in other words, the overwhelming number of positives were false positives. So if I did a quick test on 10 people, two or three were going to be positive by quick test, and somewhere around zero would be positive by culture. So, of course, I said, oh my God, I've just discovered something here. And I shared my results with my employer at the time, which is a tribal health administrator. He says, oh no, you're not allowed to do research without getting consent form signed and without that, blah, 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 blah. That's ridiculous. You know, because nothing about people's identity was being revealed. Nothing about them was in any way being impinged. They weren't being asked to ingest anything that was going to alter their health. And so just by having that barrier in place, that meant that I couldn't question, like, wait a minute, this isn't looking right. Let me just do both tests and see what trend I see over time. And so what this does then is this basically puts blinders on otherwise curious people doing inquiries that might actually be, one, very beneficial, and two, not at all harmful to the subjects involved. Now, the next thing, so this regulation of research wipes that out. Now, the next thing that's happened modern days, we have the electronic medical records. What does that mean? That means the medical records are only in the hands of those who pay for it. So the drug companies want to pay for access to information in medical records, the corporation owner who owns the clinic, whatever. But if I, as a doctor, say, you know what? I saw 100 patients last month. Let me pull all those charts and see what really happened to those patients. How effective really was my therapy? I can't do that. I can't do that. As recently as really the 80s, I would attempt to do that, and medical records would say, excuse me, Dr. Daniels, why do you want this chart? Your care of this patient ended 2 weeks ago, or a month ago, when the patient was discharged. And so I did not have that ability. And now your doctor has even less that ability. The doctor can say, you know, I wrote prescriptions for 100 antibiotics last month. I want to look at the charts of those 100 patients, and I want to see how many of those patients actually got better as a result of the antibiotics, because I'm not really feeling it. I'm not feeling like these patients are getting a result. So your doctor can't do the simple research of pulling all those charts, pouring over them, and sorting it through. Now, as I say, not that you want to, but if you want to, which is something I generally did, then there are monumental barriers to your doctor doing a dispassionate look back. We will be back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Give such delight. We all leave before morning light. Please don't go. No, please don't go. Cause I don't want to stay here on my own.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And we are talking about how apparently honest research scientists can produce so much research supporting diseases that don't exist and therapies that don't work. So, here we are. So an example of this. Okay, so first thing is, the scientists are captive. They are employees, and they are directed to research whatever. And whatever they do research on has to have a profitable money-making outcome. Otherwise, they're not going to do research on it because their employers direct them as to what to do research on. And obviously, if a scientist is not productive, if his research is not producing marketable revenue generating results, then that's it. no job, no promotion. In fact, just to let you know how intense this is, research scientists actually have an employee progress career path. Is there a career path? And the career path starts as, let's see, it's hard to tell when this career path starts or ends. Let's just say it starts to the left and goes to the right. So a person can start as a senior research scientist, unspecified type, or a research scientist, biotechnology. And from that research, they can go to a principal scientist, senior research scientist, biotechnology, senior product development scientist, research and development manager, environmental scientist, research development director, associate director of biology, research scientist, biotechnology, research director, and project manager, environmental. Now, which of these are that's going to do research on vitamin C? Your guess. Your call, because I don't know. And so there's all these different career paths that a research scientist can follow. And none of them seems to involve questions that would be relevant to a physician or doctor in making clinical decisions. By that I mean, any particular research scientist working for a particular company is not going to be motivated to do some study comparing his product to other products on the market or just to other overall products in the market. Is this market segment being beneficial? No, that's not the question. The question is there a test that can be performed? What are the results of that test? And can that test create a money-producing decision in the doctor/patient relationship? And that's pretty much the question that these that are asked here. Or even better yet, with these new emerging technologies, they're totally cutting the doctor out, where now the patient can look at his wristband and have diagnostic information related to his blood pressure, blood sugar, and various blood compositions. So these are the questions that the research scientist is directed to answer. If this research scientist were to say, none of those products are necessary, why the person can just do da-da-da, fired, demoted. So, what we now understand to be a research scientist is a thoroughly biased individual focused on product development and marketing. So the types of questions that many patients would like to know the answer to, which is this going to help me? How is this going to help me? When is this going to help me? What will happen if I do nothing? Those are not questions that the research scientist is motivated to answer. And so they have a list of popular skills for research scientists. Product development is an important skill, product development. Molecular biology, biotechnology, which is, again, is another word for product development because technology is a product. Data analysis and research analysis. Research analysis is important, and so is data analysis, by the way, because what research analysis and data analysis mean is they put a spin on the data. What does that mean? A concrete example of this means that you have scientists who do research, and then these scientists, ones who do data analysis and research analysis, they decide what the data means. And we will be back in a moment.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to Dr. Daniels, and we're talking about how honest scientists can produce results that validate imaginary diseases, therapies that are ineffective, therapies that are dangerous. Okay, so now I've got this ambitious scientist who's employed, who's directed, who's motivated by bonuses and profit sharing and commission. But it does not stop there. So this individual who is so motivated and so situated produces research. For example, you have the PSA research, that's the prostate-specific antigen research. And in this research, a research scientist detected a protein in the blood that tended to be elevated when the prostate was inflamed or irritated. And so, of course, this research scientist presented his results. I'm sure he was properly praised and rewarded. But all he did was detect a protein in the blood that corresponded to inflammation in the prostate. It was the marketing department that named it prostate-specific antigen, a major marketing victory. And it was the analysis, product analysis department that decided, whoa, we can use this to detect prostate cancer. Never mind But the research person who developed the test said, no, 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 this test can't be used for that. It's not designed for that. This antigen cannot predict prostate cancer and is not a marker. You know, it's no good for that. Prior to this, prostate-specific antigen, the blood test used for prostate cancer was alkaline phosphatase. And alkaline phosphatase was nonspecific. So if it was a bone problem, if it was a liver problem, if it was a prostate problem, then alkaline phosphatase would be elevated. And so the prostate-specific antigen, a discovery of this antigen, was a major marketing breakthrough. And that heralded the practice of pretending that prostate cancer was dangerous. But the researcher, all he did was find the protein. And it was the marketing and product development departments that took it and ran with it, that controlled the public discussion, controlled the media coverage, and controlled even the education that doctors were given in medical school and the standard of care. So the standard of care for prostate cancer, if the health of the individual was the goal, would be to ignore it, which was the standard of care in the 70s, by the way. But in the 70s, they didn't have prostate-specific antigen. They didn't have a test to beat people over the head with. And so the standard of care was actually rewritten, and doctors were actually criticized for missing a diagnosis of prostate cancer. So that's an example of how a research individual doing research can make a discovery. The discovery indicates this, but by the time marketing and product development get a hold of it, it means this. So that is another case. Now, an even better case, so in this case, there's your imaginary disease situation. And no dishonesty on the part of the scientists was required. Now, I, as you know, I'm on a mailing list for doctor alerts where your doctor finds out what's really going on. And so this is an excellent example. And this is from Medscape Family Medicine. I'll share this link with Facebook people. And this link is about research, lots of research, being done on tea and its benefits. And a lot of you might not be used to evaluating research studies, so I will do that along the way here. So drinking tea, are the health benefits real? Which suggests that some health benefits might be imaginary. All right. So they first tell you about tea to kind of suck you in and get you to believe stuff. So tea, probably first brewed beverage in China around 2700 BC. Sounds very believable. I guess I could check it out, but why bother? It's one of the oldest, and after water, the second most consumed drink in the world. And so Camellia sinensis is an evergreen shrub with shiny, bright green leaves, strongly scented flowers, and brown-green seed-bearing fruit used to produce tea. It has more than 1,500 cultivars, it means varieties, derived from two varieties, blah, blah, blah. And it grows in generally warm and humid climates, preferably in acid soils, on sloping hills at elevations of 2,000 meters. Okay, so what are we talking about? We think we're talking about Camellia species of tea. That's what we think we're talking about. I have to remind you because it gets confusing. After becoming popular in Europe, tea was spread widely by the forces of colonialism. Today, the biggest tea-producing countries are China, India, Kenya, and Sri Lanka. Around the world, many cultures celebrate the drink for its contributions to social cohesiveness, flavor, and potential. That means not real, right? Potential, possible, health benefits. And we drink a lot of tea. I think the we means the United States. 4.8 million tons worldwide. And in America, 127,000 tons. Not a lot. Okay. And the tea industry is worth $12.5 billion in the United States in 2017. Well, oh, that's a billion. Healthcare is trillion, so it's still kind of small. All right, so these are all types and subtypes. So white tea, these are all from the same tree, by the way. White tea, green tea, yellow tea, black tea, oolong, and Perth. And so they go on to more about the Specialty Tea Association, blah, blah, blah. So this gets you to where you're like, wow, this is just a lot of useful information about tea, right? These folks know what they're talking about. I'm really excited to find out more about tea. Okay, so remember, we started out talking about this bush, and we listed all the teas derived from this bush. Here's where the subject changes, and you might get confused, because I should go, if I had to go back and read it a second time. Okay, so the potential health benefits of tea consumption have been the subject of thousands of studies, many of which have examined the role of polyphenols. These are all big words that you don't need to know. So polyphenols, including flavonoids, are a class of phytochemicals believed to give tea its antioxidant properties, flavor, color, and smell. So we've got all these big words, which, again, I'm with you, like, yeah. And it may reduce LDL cholesterol and lower the risk of heart disease. And they may also have anti-cancer effects, something to the potential to mediate the oxidation of DNA and by inducing blah, 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 blah. So now I'm really impressed because I am totally confused. I don't know what the heck they're talking about, but guess what? They probably, I can tell you, they don't know what they're talking about either, as we will find out. Potential benefits. Currently, some of the most promising evidence for research, and a promise is just that, a promise, something that's not real, it's a promise. So positive effects of flavonoids in coronary artery disease and stroke. Total intake of flavonoids and flavones is associated with lower intake, lower risk of fatal cardiovascular disease. But wait, stop right now. How do you intake the flavonoids and the flavones? Is it from tea or is it from other sources? So now we are like totally confused, right? This research scientist and his colleagues evaluate how flavonoids found in tea may affect flow-mediated debilitation and help counter endothelial dysfunction, an early phase in the pathogenesis of atherosclerosis. Although these effects are not completely understood, current evidence suggests, that's pretty weak, evidence suggests, I'm just letting you know, that moderate tea drinking may enhance endothelial-dependent vasodilatation and help explain the positive benefits of tea on health. But wait. He evaluated how flavonoids, he didn't evaluate the tea. He didn't hand people a glass of tea and say, drink it. Oh, no. He isolated the flavonoids. And then he did a study with those isolated flavonoids. So we still, his research has given us zero information about tea because he didn't use tea in the research. This is another flip. And so what he's really looking at here is this one agent, flavonoids. And the real question here is, if we put this in a pill and sell it, can we show if it improves endothelial function in atherosclerosis? So we still have no information about a cup of tea, just letting you know here. Now we have lab animals, not people, lab animals. Tea has been shown to protect against lead and cadmium-induced oxidative stress. But again, we have laboratory animals. And finally, this one gets evidence, shown to protect. It supports a hypothesis. But again, we have no information here. because we have lab animals. These are not people. And lab animals, we don't know, what were they? Were they rats? Were they mice? Were they hamsters? Were they parakeets? Were they worms? We don't know. Another study examined the effect of tea polyphenols on oxidative stress. Again, not the tea, but the polyphenols were isolated. So we did the flavonoids, now we're doing research on polyphenols. And whether the circadian clock could explain the protective effect, tea polyphenols were shown to improve redox imbalance and mitochondrial dysfunction in hepatocytes. Right. But did that make anybody feel better? And oops, did anyone drink any tea? No. It was the polyphenols isolated from the tea, out of context, so we really don't know. And does improving the redox imbalance and mitochondrial function in hepatocytes help with overall health? We don't know. What about the mitochondria in other cells? And what about imbalances besides the redox imbalance? We don't know. We haven't looked at. So we have something. It's not tea. It's something we believe to be present in tea. And it was done in lab animals, not humans. Are you seeing how it's like we're playing that game of telephone where one person says something and repeats it to the next person, the next person, the next person? By the end of the line, 100 people, it is so far removed from the original message as to be meaningless. And this is the kind of research that scientists are engaged in. And here's the capper. Another research scientist and colleagues reviewed several well-conducted studies that support the promising oxidative anti-inflammatory effects of tea catechins on oxidative stress. Considered, a key component of the pathologic mechanism underlying Alzheimer's disease. Well, let's break this down. We have a research scientist, got that. He didn't do any research. He read other people's studies. And their studies didn't study tea. Oh, no, no. It isolated catechins from tea. And this research was based on a belief that oxidative stress is a key component of Alzheimer's. This is so vague and so tenuous. I mean, excuse me, can we get some toilet paper and just flush it? This is not even as valuable as a roll of toilet paper. And so we have research scientists studying a study that studies something of no known significance. And this is how scientists can come up with conclusions that are just so far off the mark in terms of being of any benefit at all to a human being called a patient in consultation with an expert professional called a doctor who's been totally educated based on this research. Now, potential harms. What does potential mean? Again, it means the possibility, not the reality. So potential means not reality. And in place of potential, you can put the word imagined. So these are imagined harms. Okay. In a large population-based case-control study, Yang and colleagues, that means Yang, a research scientist, and his colleagues, picked a person and then picked another person who was the same age, gender, lifestyle, everything. And so all kinds of people they picked. And for each person, they picked a corresponding individual that was similar, if not identical. Okay. They concluded that drinking very hot tea increased the risk for esophageal squamous cell carcinoma in a sample of high-risk Chinese men. Whoa, whoa, whoa. These men were already high-risk. Especially in those who also consumed alcohol. Excuse me, could it have been the alcohol? And say they deduced it's plausible that the increase in esophageal cancer risk is attributable to thermal injury. Why didn't they just do a control group of like hot tea and hot water? They didn't look at that? You have to scratch your head on this one. They encourage tea drinkers to allow their tea to cool before consuming, even though this may have nothing to do with the tea. And so the International Agency for Research on Cancers, they believe consuming hot beverages of any type is probably carcinogenic. Probably? Did someone do some research on this? No. Just pull that one right off the air. And so this is what your doctor is basing his information on, this research. this is really absolutely shocking. So neurodegeneration in cancer, that means degeneration of the nervous system. That would mean things like paralysis, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig's disease. So two researchers found that green tea polyphenols, in other words, not green tea, polyphenols. So they isolate polyphenols from the green tea. that they suppress, disaggregate, and modulate fibrillation, which has an important potential role. Again, potential, just substitute the word imagine, has an important imagined role in Parkinson's disease. Now, you've got these polyphenols you've isolated from tea, so you threw the tea away a long time ago. And you're doing research on the relationship between this isolated fraction, which if it is effective, you can sell it as a pill, by the way, on an imagined variable. We'll be back after commercial.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
All right, we're taking a look at some serious research here. And really, just how devastating and damaging this kind of research is. But this is the quality of research your doctor has access to base his medical judgments on. And even worse, your doctor is not allowed to do his own research. For example, when I was in medicine, it was really the electronic chart was the kiss of death. For your doctor to be able to retrospectively take a responsible look back at what his track record is. So For example, a big turnaround in my medical practice was when I took a look at all the patients who died during the year to find that 100% of them were tested, diagnosed, and medicated. The death rate from my patients who refused medicines, who didn't show up for their appointments, who refused testing was zero. Zero. And for me, that made it pretty clear to me that what I was trained in medical school to do was absolutely not helpful. Not helpful at all. And so that, for me, gave me the courage and the confidence to tell each and every patient, you do not need to stick to the standard of care. This is the standard of care, but I've never seen it help anybody. Here are some other choices. So, and just that one little thing, having that little conversation with people, the death rate in the medical my medical practice went to zero, because people no longer felt obligated to continue taking medicines that were giving them side effects. You know, they would let me know, and I would stop the medicine, and we either switch to one that did not give them side effects, or to another method of helping them heal. So, let's take a look at this research. It gets even more involved. Okay, so another researcher found that an unpronounceable thing, I'll pronounce it, epigallocatechin, gallate, and quercetin in extracted forms and as found naturally in green tea. So these are extracted forms. Person did not drink the tea. Have anti-carcinogenic effects on both estrogen receptor positive and negative breast cancer cells. Whoa, the cells. This is an effect it has on the cells. So this person did not do any research on the effect that these compounds had on the individual who had the cancer. They took some cancer cells, put it in a petri dish, added these things to it, and said, oh, it's not helping the cell. It's not helping the cancer cell to thrive. So we have this research. We still don't have any information about what these compounds are going to do in the body of a human being. And we don't know if these compounds should be administered as a pill, as a tea, and how much and how often. So this person, this researcher, has done research. And people are drawing conclusions from this research that cannot be drawn. Since these compounds were not used in humans, we don't know. We have no idea. We are going to commercial and we will be back.
I saw you there, just standing there. I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again. You said you would come and dance with me. Dance with me.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.